win at any game, you first have to know the rules. That's true for everything, from Monopoly to your 401k. Hi, I'm Rob West. Well, managing your 401k is certainly no game. It's serious business. But there's a little-known rule about your 401k that could be a real blessing in a financial crisis. I'll explain today. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Okay, if you have a 401k retirement plan, you know it's filled with rules that most people aren't fond of, but the one we're talking about today is an exception. It's the so-called Rule of 55. Normally, you're not allowed to withdraw money from your 401k without incurring a 10% penalty until you reach age 59 and a half. But the Rule of 55 is a special IRS provision that waives the penalty once you reach 55 or older. By the way, the Rule of 55 also applies to 403b retirement accounts. That's the equivalent plan for nonprofit organizations. Now, how does it work? Well, it only applies in a few specific conditions. For example, if you're 55 or older and leave your job, you can withdraw funds without the penalty, but you can't take advantage of the rule if you're still working at the company where you have the 401k or 403b. And you have to leave that job in the calendar year you turn 55 or later to get a penalty-free distribution. But if you're a public safety worker, such as a police officer, firefighter, or even air traffic controller, the rule actually kicks in at age 50. If you lose or leave your job before the eligible age, you miss out on the rule entirely. You won't be able to take a penalty-free withdrawal until you reach the usual age of 59 and a half. And as with all exceptions to the 10% penalty, the Rule of 55 still has tax implications. It doesn't get you out of paying taxes on your withdrawals, which are considered income on your federal return, and probably your state return if your state has an income tax. I know all of that can be confusing, so maybe it would be easier to talk about when the rule doesn't apply. For starters, it doesn't apply to retirement plans from previous employers. It has to be the 401k at your current or latest job to be eligible. Also, it doesn't apply to individual retirement accounts, either a traditional or a Roth IRA. For those, you'd still have to be 59 and a half before making penalty-free withdrawals. However, there's a way around the provision that excludes previous 401k or 403b accounts. You can roll those funds over from a previous account to your current one if your employer accepts rollovers. Not all do, so check with your HR department to find out. Then, once you've completed the rollover, all of the money in your current account, including the transferred amount, will be available if you make an early withdrawal under the Rule of 55. But of course, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. In almost all cases, tapping into your 401k is not advisable because you're essentially robbing your future and giving up not just the money, but the time you've invested in building up those funds. You may be able to replace the funds eventually, but you can never get back the time, which is critical for long-term compounding gains in your portfolio. You're essentially starting over, but with less time before retirement. So you want to avoid early withdrawals if at all possible, even if you can do it without the 10% penalty under the Rule of 55. Proverbs 13:11 teaches, "Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it." Okay, so when would it be okay to take an early withdrawal from a 401k? Well, only if you simply have no other choice. Remember, you can only use the Rule of 55 if you're no longer with the employer where you had the account. In some cases, that probably means you've lost your job or a significant part of your income due to your hours being cut. But even then, you should delay as long as possible before making an early withdrawal from your 401k. You can use the Mayday budget available at MoneyWise.org. It'll help you prioritize your spending, and we'll put a link to that in today's show notes. And keep in mind that you should have an adequate emergency fund of 3 to 6 months living expenses saved up before financial calamity strikes, and you want to exhaust that before making a withdrawal from your 401k or 403b. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and this is MoneyWise on American Family Radio, at least for a few more days, and then we'll have a brand new name to ring in the new year. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. It's time to turn the corner and take your questions today. Anything financial is appropriate. We'd love to hear from you. Before we head to the phones, let me remind you here in December, as we press ever so fervently toward year end, this is a great time for you to consider a gift to MoneyWise Media. If you're a part of our MoneyWise family, you listen to this program with regularity. Perhaps you're using the MoneyWise app, like now more than 37,000 of you are. We're so excited about that. And you're frequently visiting the website. And you'd like to support this work, we'd certainly be grateful as we press toward year end and try to solve for our end of year goal. We're on our way to 250,000. So if you'd like to make a gift to the ministry, we would certainly be grateful. You can head to our website, moneywise.org. Just click Give Now at the top of the page, and any amount will help. And I'm serious about that. Whether you give one time or as a monthly patron, again, we would just be grateful for your support beyond your giving to your local church. Again, moneywise.org, click Give Now at the top of the page, and thanks in advance. All right, let's get started today. We're going to begin in Chattanooga, Tennessee, WMBW. Gary, you'll be our first caller, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have two questions regarding my 401k. Sure. I have a 401k through work, and I also have a second one that I've started a while back through, like, Betterment. And I'm told that the total for that I can contribute is $7,000. And is that combined between the two, or is there a separate total for, like, the work and the private one?
Okay, so tell me again what you have. You have a 401k at work, and then what is the second retirement account you're talking about?
The second one is just a Roth that I've established through Betterment.
Oh, a Roth IRA. Okay, and what is your age?
I'm 66.
Okay. Yeah, so you can contribute through salary deferral in a 401k, $27,000 for 2022 if you're 50 years of age or older. You have quite a bit of money that you can put into those plans. On a Roth IRA, you can put in up to $7,000 for this year if you are over age 50. So, and you can contribute to both of them. Is that different, though, than what you're hearing?
No, well, I just wasn't sure. I've asked a couple different questions and gotten answers, but they've been not explicit enough to give me the information I need, but you've been very helpful in that regard. I do have one other question, though.
Yeah, go right ahead.
The one through the work is currently set up in a target, like a 2025 target fund.
Yes.
But given my age and assuming that my health holds out and that my wife and I are both still alive that long, I'm anticipating maybe not needing that money until I'm 75. So I'm wondering if it would be advantageous for me to move that out to like a 2030 fund or maybe something different altogether.
Yeah. And so you said your age is 67, is that right?
I'm 66, yes.
66, okay. And your best guess on when you might need to start drawing an income from that would be what?
Well, I'm hoping, I'm planning on working until I retire, again, if my health holds out. And between that, I have a small pension through prior stuff. So long as my wife and I are both alive, we'll be okay with that. We won't really need to draw on that income. The target is maybe 75 before we would actually need that.
Yeah. Okay. I would certainly be fine with you getting a little more aggressive on that, especially given the fact that you would not expect to need that money. That would give you the ability, number one, to let it recover, with the stock market being where it is right now and expecting a recovery to come sometime next year. By moving it out to a 2030 fund, you would probably expect to have, I think a typical 2030 fund is going to have about 35% in bonds, about 65% in stocks. So you just have to recognize that, you know, with essentially 65% or somewhere between 55 and 65% in stocks, you're going to be a little more volatile. So you just need to make sure that you're, you know, comfortable weathering a little more volatility, even in this season of life. But so long as, again, you don't see a need for this, you just want to let it continue to grow, and you're comfortable seeing, you know, a statement that is down 15% or, you know, maybe even 20% if we were to get into a full-blown bear market, whether that's next year or, you know, 5 or 6 years from now, that you would feel like you could ride that out and not feel compelled to kind of rush to cash, which would, you know, cause you to have to lock in those losses. So I think, you know, as long as you have a plan, some rationale behind it, and you're willing to stick with that long-term plan, then, you know, I would be comfortable with you taking slightly more risk than we would typically advise with somebody, you know, in their late 60s. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. You're very welcome, Gary. I think, you know, one of the other things I would challenge you to do is just define enough during this season of life. You know, there's an exercise that you can go through, whether you do that yourself with an online calculator or by hiring an advisor, to determine what is our ultimate savings goal, and are we on track for that with the current amount that we're putting away, plus what's already in there and reasonable growth rates over time, or do we still have a ways to go? And at what point do we draw kind of a financial finish line in the sand to say, you know what, we've accumulated enough, and therefore or we can increase our giving, or, you know, do other things with that money beyond just continuing to save for saving's sake. So I think each of us needs to wrestle through that decision, both for lifestyle spending, that's, you know, your income, but also for your ultimate long-term savings and accumulation, just so you know what the end is. It's defined, and then that gives you the freedom beyond that to say, you know what, we've accumulated enough, or we're on track to do so, and therefore maybe we ought to be looking for other needs around us or aligning our passions with giving opportunities, things like that. So if you haven't already gone through that exercise, Gary, I think that would be well worth your time. And if you need an advisor to help you with that, there's some wonderful certified Kingdom advisors there in Chattanooga. We appreciate you calling today. Thanks for being a part of the program. Let's head to Ohio, WCRF. Hey, Ed, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Well, hi, Rob. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. I hope you had a nice week off. I tried calling Monday last week, and it was all pre-recorded. I said, well, these guys are taking a well-earned vacation, so that's cool. All right, I've sort of got a question that I've been, you know, pondering for a little while, and it's outside of your realm of topics today, but I just thought I'd throw it out there anyway.
Sure.
Can you advise, or are you aware of, and actually it's, I'm going to split it into two tangents now. Are you aware of any faith-based financial institutions such as banks and things like that? And how about any faith-based legal organizations, you know, attorneys and things like that?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a legal, although you could contact a CKA and ask for a referral to a godly estate planning attorney. They would all have one. With regard to financial institutions, there are some good ones. I would direct you to look to the Christian Community Credit Union at cccu.org. We know those folks well, and I think that would be aligned with what you're looking for as a banking institution in particular. Ed, thanks for your call today. Stay on the line. I'll make sure you don't have any other follow-ups. And we'll be right back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, recognizing money issues, well, they're heart issues. Hey, just before the break, we were talking to Ed. He was wondering about a faith-based banking option, and I mentioned our friends at Christian Community Credit Union for Believers, and I gave an incorrect URL, so let me correct that now. If you'd like to reach out to the Christian Community Credit Union, you'd do that on the web at myccu.com. That's myccu.com. You can check it out today. All right, back to the phones we go. Chattanooga, we'll stay right there. Lindsay, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. My husband got into some debt over the past few years on a credit card. Of course, the interest rates were very high once the promotional period goes away. So he recently took out a personal loan to pay off the credit card so we could get out from under the weight of that interest rate. Yet I was wondering, how can he build his credit score back up while we continue to pay off this debt?
Yeah, so what is the credit? What is his credit score?
Right now, it's probably 650. It used to be probably closer to 800.
Okay. Does he have late payments?
I'm pretty sure there were a few that were late, yes.
Okay. So that will take care of itself over time as long as he continues to be an on-time payer. Now, what may be hurting him is a couple of things. Number one would be the credit mix. So based on the credit algorithm, 10% of your score comes from the various types of credit you have, and the score rewards folks that have different types of credit. So having revolving accounts like a credit card on top of a mortgage, on top of an installment loan like a car loan where you're paying a set amount each month, having multiple types of credit all in good standing is going to improve your score. And if he paid off the revolving account, and replaced that with the personal, then that changed the credit mix and may have pushed the score down. Obviously, the late payments are going to impact it as well. And then the credit utilization would be the other big one, which has to do with the total amount available versus the balance. So if that utilization of credit is above 30%, that's going to drive the score down. I think the key right now is let's try to get out of debt. And so that's a number one, just doing whatever you can to keep lifestyle at a minimum and get as much going to the paying of those debts as possible to keep those balances coming down. Obviously, you want to improve your score over time. So what can you do to that end? Well, one option would be what's called a secured credit card, Lindsay. So if he wanted to put or together you all wanted to put a certain amount on deposit with a bank and have a credit card issued against that, which prevents you from ever being able to go into debt because you can only charge up to the limit that's on deposit. And then what I would do is put a recurring budgeted charge on that card every month. It may be a subscription that's already built into your budget of, you know, $10 or $12 a month, and then pay that off in full. Well, that's going to do a couple of things. It's going to add that credit card, that secured card, back as one of the credit lines in your credit mix. That's good. And then secondly, it's going to show you as an on-time payer every month with that particular account. That will help improve that score over time and at the same time ensure that you all don't ever get overextended. So that would be a secured credit card. One other option would be, do you have accounts in your name only that are current and in good standing that he is not a part of?
I have like a home, a car loan in my name. I don't believe I have any credit cards in my name.
Okay. Because if you did and you were using those for budgeted items, you can add him even without him using them as an authorized user. And then that would be reported to his report. So I think perhaps this next step for you all is to have this secured card. Since credit cards have gotten you in trouble in the past, I would stay away from an unsecured card where they just extend you a $5,000 or $10,000 limit and just allow you to charge as much as you want against that. I'd go with the secured card because that's going to prevent you from getting getting into debt, but still accomplish the same thing from a credit reporting standpoint, as long as you just have a monthly charge on there. Again, it can be very small, and then that on-time payment will be reported every month. In terms of picking the financial institution, you could approach your local bank about that, or you could check out nerdwallet.com or bankrate.com to find which banking institutions or finance companies have the very best secured credit cards right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's super helpful. Yeah, thank you. I guess to follow that up, it's not necessary then for us to go into like a credit counseling arrangement. We can theoretically rebuild it on our own, taking these steps.
You can. In fact, credit counseling won't really improve your credit score at all, apart from helping you get out of debt. And it sounds like you're doing that on your own. And what you have now is you've eliminated all of your credit cards because you replaced them with this personal loan, correct?
Yes. Well, it was actually okay. One major credit card.
Okay. But you no longer have that because it was paid off when you took out the personal loan?
I believe. I need to double check on that. I hope not. But yeah, double check.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. If you have a balance on a credit card right now that's active, yeah, I would put that into credit counseling because, again, even though that won't improve your score, it's going to help you get out of debt. And that's really what's most important. Through credit counseling, you can get that interest rate lowered and get that paid back 80% faster on average. If you no longer have any credit card debt because it's all been paid off with a personal loan, that personal loan is not able to be put into credit counseling. So you would just keep that right where it is and just try to free up as much money as you can on a monthly basis in your budget and just try to pay that off as fast as you can by applying, principal reduction over and above the monthly payment. But again, if you check and find out that you have an active credit card with a balance, especially if it's more than $4,000, then I would absolutely contact our friends at ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's my preferred way to get out of credit card debt. Doesn't apply to a personal loan, but if you have credit card debt, it'd be a great way to go. Lindsay, thanks for your call today. All the best to you guys as you seek to be completely debt-free over time. You can do it. Just stick with it, and you'll get it done here in no time. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We have some great questions lined up that we'll tackle right around the corner. Don't go anywhere. Thrilled to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Let's head to Chicago. Glenn, you'll be our next caller. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm calling on more to get advice for my son. So he's 24. He just moved into his first apartment or just moved out.
Okay.
First time moving out over the weekend, so excited for him about that. And he's got good credit. His goal is to buy a home and eventually bring down his debt and, you know, be debt free. But one of the things that is hanging over him, and he's been trying to pay this off, is a Sallie Mae school loan. And we've tried to refinance it a couple times, and I don't know if it's because it's the type of loan, but it's because he's, for that one, I believe he's making the minimum payment. And so for about a year and a half, it's been at the same amount, which is like almost $16,000. And that's his main debt that he's really trying to, you know, get under control and off of his credit. So I didn't know if this was something that could go to the credit debt counseling and to try to refinance his score or bring that, not his score, I'm sorry, his interest rate, or just that's the main debt that we're trying to really get a hold of. He does have a car loan, a truck loan, that he does really well paying on. His credit score is, I think, above 750. And so he's been doing really well. But any tips on the school loan? It's not a federal loan. So obviously he's not getting many breaks for this LED.
Yeah, unfortunately, credit counseling is not going to be an option here, Glenn. I love the idea that he wants to get this paid off as quickly as possible. You're right. Sallie Mae loans generally are private. That wasn't always the case. If there's an older loan, it could have been a federal loan, but all the more recent Sallie Mae loans are going to be private loans. So you don't have to think about that, which gives you the option to go out and refinance this. So if he has a good credit score and perhaps his income is stronger now than it was in the past, he could go out and look at perhaps refinancing to a lower rate, although in this current interest rate environment, that's probably not going to be an option. Even if he's improved his credit worthiness with rates going up, he's going to be hard-pressed to find something lower. So I think at the end of the day, even though he doesn't have to worry about giving up the federal repayment options, which is what we're generally concerned about if somebody were to refinance a federal loan and then gives up that income-based repayment and some of the other benefits of a federal loan, that's not applicable here. But at the same time, you know, I think, you know, given that rates are higher, he's probably going to need to just stick with what he has. So then it just comes down to keeping his lifestyle in check, having a budget, getting on a plan, and trying to free up as much as possible, protecting himself in terms of as his income rises, not allowing his expenses to rise along with it, so that he can get as much margin every month going to that student loan as possible to get that paid back just as quickly as he can. But programs like credit counseling and others really don't apply here to student loans. So he's probably just going to need to stick with what he has.
Okay. Okay. And I'll talk to him about that. Can I ask one more question regarding the kids in this age group? So for them, when they're, I have a daughter that's in her mid-20s also. And so Roth loans, are there any that you would recommend for them? A Roth IRA.
So the key is to get it open and just start contributing systematically. In terms of the investments inside of them, just buying a high quality, stock mutual fund that, you know, really just purchases the broad market index from one of the big firms, I'd probably recommend Fidelity or Schwab as the place to open that Roth IRA. And then you can use, either of their robo-advisor solutions to basically have a low cost approach to capturing a stock market index that's just going to mirror the market as it rises and falls. But the key is to get the systematic investments going into the Roth, meaning a contribution every month so that you can dollar cost average in up to the $6,000 they can contribute this year, as long as they have at least that much in earned income. And I would point them again to probably Fidelity or Schwab to get that open and get started. All right.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for your call today. God bless you. Let's see. We'll head to Chattanooga. We've been there twice already today. We'll go back. Howard, how can I help you, sir?
Hello. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks.
Yes. My question is, I have just started a new job, but I'm putting 8% in a Roth, and then putting 8% in a 401k. But I didn't know, I guess my question is, how much can I put in those and not be penalized? And my age is 48.
Yeah, so under 50, you can put a good bit away. You can put in up to $20,500 this year. That's going up to $22,500 next year in the 401k. That'll come through salary deferral, so out of your paycheck. And then you can do on top of that another $6,000 under the age of 50 this year into a Roth IRA. So between the two, you could put away $26,500 between the 401k and the Roth.
Now, what did you say the amount was on the Roth? I'm sorry.
$6,000 for the Roth for this year, and $20,500 for the 401k.
Okay.
All
now,
right.
Now, if you I'm just having a flat like 8% put in each one, and what happens if you exceed that amount?
Well, you don't want to do that. So you're probably fine in the 401k. The question is, if you're overfunding that Roth. So you're going to want to look at how close to $6,000 you are in the Roth. Now, you said you're having 8% put into it automatically. Are you talking about a Roth 401k? Is this happening through your employer, or is this a Roth IRA that you set up?
It's through my employer.
Oh,
it's
I see. Okay.
Fidelity.
Got it. Okay. So let's back up just for a second based on what I told you earlier. So if these are both 401ks, you can only put in up to the maximum amount between the two. So you can put in up to $20,500 for the year in all of your 401ks combined. The IRS doesn't care how much you put into the Roth versus the traditional. You just can't exceed $20,500 between the two. So you just need to go look at how much you have going in. Your HR department should be on top of this. I doubt you've over contributed, but the additional $6,000 I was talking about would be if you were contributing directly to a Roth IRA. That's not what you have here. So you just need to check with your HR department or the plan administrator and just see how much you have going into those two. And between the two, the Roth 401k and the traditional 401k, just make sure you don't put in more than $20,500 for the year. If you do, you're going to have to take some back and you'll pay some penalties. Howard, thanks for your call. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Thrilled to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Let's head back to the phones today as we talk to Norma in Boca Raton, Florida. Norma, go right ahead.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. I'll make it quick. I'm calling because I'm trying to help a friend who has brought his financial issues to me. So here's the bottom line. I thought earlier when I said I think I misinformed your first person, I said there was $10,000 worth of debt, but there's $13,000 worth of debt, and he lives entirely on Social Security, which is about $2,300 a month.
Okay.
In doing a budget for him, I have said, okay, $1,500 for fixed expenses, $700 for his variable expenses.
Okay.
In other words, anything where, you know, that's not already allocated.
Sure.
In the $1,500 is $350 a month for those credit card charges that he owes.
Yeah.
On one card, it's 25%, and he owes $6,000 on that. On the other card, it's 23% APR, and he owes $7,000 on that.
Wow.
I have said, I think he should continue to pay it. Now, it's not a lot. I mean, he really has a tight squeeze, and he's not in great health. So he's trying to live on $700 a month effectively is very hard.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's where he is. That's where he's landed with what he has against what he owes. So he's got two sets of advice. Me, I'm saying you should pay it no matter what. And the other friend says, no, let it go. So I just thought, well, you know, it never occurred to me to let something go. But it's a new thought for me. And I thought, let me ask someone else who does this, and perhaps I could get some guidance. We are Christians. We are Catholics. He wants to pay it, but it's a formidable amount. One other thing to tell you, one last thing. I've looked at debt consolidation. It will work out to be about the same per month, even if he does consolidate the debt. So that's where we are. So please, whatever your best Christian advice is, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. And when you say you looked at debt consolidation, do you mean consolidation in the sense that he would take out a new loan and try to roll them all together? Or do you mean debt management like a credit counseling program?
Credit counseling.
Yeah, so typically we'd look at a number of around 3% per month. So on $13,000, that would be $390 a month, probably maybe just a little bit more, I think $40 more than what you said. But the difference would be at those interest rates, Norma, of 23 and 25%. I mean, those are sky high, and he's probably not making hardly any progress at $350 a month toward getting those debts going in the right direction. Whereas with the debt management program, although, you know, he would still still be really tight. I mean, having to live on that $700 a month that you described, at least those debts would be heading in the right direction. And on a credit counseling program through debt management, you typically pay the debts off 80% faster because you have a fixed monthly payment as opposed to the minimum declining with the balance, which is what happens with credit cards. So you have a level monthly payment, and then those interest rates would come way down, usually between 8 and 15% instead of, you know, 23, 25%, which is going to make a huge difference. So that would be the way I would go, because A, it's going to, you know, keep him really focused on paying that down. It's, you know, going to get the interest rates down, so more is going toward principal. And then, you know, to the idea of just ignoring them, you know, you're asking for a Christian response. I would just say there is a non-issue there. I mean, the Bible is very clear. It's Psalm 37, the wicked borrows and does not repay. You can't get any plainer than that. Or Proverbs 3, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to act. And I realize money is tight. It would be very easy to walk away. This is unsecured debt, which means there's no collateral tied to it. You're not going to have a car repossessed or anything like that. But from a legal standpoint, the creditors could and would likely pursue a judgment, which means if there's a judgment, there could be garnishments and it'll be on his public record. And, you know, so there's that whole legal side and the practical implications. But I would say, you know, at the core of your question is, how do you honor the Lord with this? And the way you honor the Lord is to make good on your obligations, as difficult as it is. So I would say, kind of coming full circle, I would encourage you to encourage him to visit with our friends at ChristianCreditCounselors.org. It's not going to take a lot of pressure off in terms of the monthly budget, but it is going to get these going in the right direction. And I think that's probably what it's going to take for him to do the hard work to finally get this paid off. And hopefully, after doing that, you know, he will have the kind of fortitude, if you will, to never get back in that situation again. And then he can recapture that $350, $390 a month and put that back into his budget, so he's got a little bit more margin. Does that all make sense?
That makes perfect sense to me. Okay. Thank you. And thank all you right. for the reinforcement, Bob, because I, you know, I thought, well, maybe I just don't know the modern world. I don't understand it. You know, peace. The advice is coming from someone who's dealt with credit counseling, and of course, he appears to be the expert, but it doesn't feel right to me. So I'm happy to have your
Well, and this would be well, you're very welcome. And not, you know, the other thing that I didn't mention, Norma, is it would be very painful, and just in terms of the collection agents, the phone calls, the I'll say harassment that a lot of them are involved in, not to mention just wreaking havoc on his credit as well. So yeah, not the way to go. I'd encourage him to take your counsel, which is the right approach according to biblical wisdom, but also conventional wisdom as well. We appreciate you checking in with us. Columbus, Ohio, Pamela, thanks for your patience. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I have a question. I have rental property that was given to me that I inherited when my mother passed away. And it just keeps digging me in a hole, like I'm doing a sewer replacement now. Now I need a new roof. And so, and I really don't have enough money to get the new roof. I'm not, and the money that I'm getting off the rental property is paying for the sewer line. Mm. So my question to you is, people are calling me every day to buy that house.
Yeah.
Should I try to find some kind of way to get those repairs done? Because it's paid for, the taxes are paid up. Or should I just sell it? And if I do, those people that call me every day, should I go through them or go through someone else if I decide to sell it?
Yeah, I mean, just based on what I'm hearing, Pamela, I would encourage you to sell it, but not to the people who are calling you or sending you text messages or phone calls, which, by the way, if you're like me, those are going through the roof. The reason is they're going to lowball you on the offer. You know, typically you're going to get with something like that if it's legitimate, and many of them aren't, but let's say it is, they're going to offer you probably something around 30% below the true market value. So let's not respond to those by any means. sense, but let's first decide, does it make sense for you to sell it, given what you're describing here and the repairs and, you know, the fact that you don't really have the money to keep this up, and it sounds like it, you know, may not be even wise if you did. I'd say, you know, it's an inheritance. Let's be grateful for it, that this is part of God's provision, but let's get it sold and redeploy that money into either an investment strategy or paying down debt or, you know, maybe picking up another investment property, but one of your choosing down the road and when you're ready financially. If you made that decision, how should you go about selling it? Well, I'd look for a real estate professional in that area, one who specializes in that part of town. You may want to drive around that neighborhood or the surrounding neighborhoods and see who has the most signs and interview them. You could ask for a referral as well if you're in that local area. But you're going to want to find a real estate professional. And the first thing I would do is get their opinion on what repairs or improvements you need to make and which you don't, because you want to do as little as possible to get that ready to sell to maximize the value of the sale. And there's a lot of things you could do, but they're actually not things that you'll be able to recover when you sell it. There may be, though, some critical things that you need to do that if you don't, it's actually going to cause you to lose some of the value, and those you might, you know, want to go ahead and take care of. But I would get a professional in there who can evaluate that, you know, through their lens and help you make those decisions. Okay.
Okay. And thank you so much. And I've learned so much from listening to your program. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very sweet. Thank you for calling today. God bless you. Quickly to Minnesota, Kathy, you're going to be our final caller today. Go right ahead.
Yes. If somebody retires before their full retirement, does their Social Security check get, if they're working, dinged if they make more or too much or...
Yeah. So if you're, you can earn as much as you want, on Social Security, you know, after full retirement age. But if you, are working before full retirement age for Social Security, you will have, an amount that is reduced. And the good news is though, that that amount will be made up to you after the fact. So once you turn full retirement age, any amount that was withheld from you will be returned to you over time. So essentially the way it works is a dollar in benefits is deducted for each $2 you earn above the annual limit. And the limit for 2022 is $19,560. So again, prior to full retirement age, you're working. Anything above $19,560 is going to reduce your benefits by a dollar for every $2 you earn above that. But again, that will be made up to you after full retirement age over a period of time through a higher check. So you will eventually get that back. And then once you reach full retirement age, you can earn as much as you want. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling, Kathy. We appreciate it. That's going to do it for us today, folks. We appreciate you being along with us today. I hope the show has been an encouragement and informative, and I hope you come back and join us tomorrow. Let me say thank you to my team today. Grateful for Pat Montague handling our phones today, Devin Patrick, our producer, and Jim Henry supporting me with great research today. Thank you for being along with us as well. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and come back and join us tomorrow for another edition of MoneyWise on American Family Radio. God bless you.